Mercury Theater on the air. The Columbia Broadcasting System takes pleasure in bringing you the 12th in its series of weekly broadcasts featuring Orson Welles and the Mercury Theaters on the air. Tonight, Broadway's and radio's most celebrated theatrical producing company brings to life the most beloved character in detective fiction, the immortal Sherlock Holmes. The play is Orson Welles' own adaptation for radio of William Gillette's enduring melodrama based on the famous stories by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
My name is Watson. I am a doctor. It was in the year 1880 that Holmes and I were introduced by a mutual acquaintance. At that time, we were both looking for a lodging that would suit our moderate means. This we found on the second floor of a house at 221B Baker Street. And it was during the years that we occupied these chambers together that Holmes established his unique international reputation as a consulting detective. During that time, I was privileged to be his daily companion, and I have done my modest share in giving to the world an account of some of his most famous cases. Most famous of these are the ones of which I have written under the names of The Speckled Band, Sign of Four, Hound of the Baskervilles, and A Study in Scarlet. They represent, however, only a minute fraction of the 643 cases Holmes successfully solved during the years that we shared the lodgings in Baker Street. Other cases I hope one day to give to the world include the Tarlington murders, the sudden death of Cardinal Tosca, the adventure of Ricoletti of the club foot and his abominable wife, the case of Mrs. Farintosh, the circus belle, and the case of the royal family of Scandinavia. Each illustrate in their own way the remarkable genius of my friend Sherlock Holmes. Since my marriage 3 years ago, Holmes has continued to occupy the Baker Street lodgings by himself, and here, almost every afternoon, when my work in the office is finished, I'm in the habit of calling on him. The sitting room as you go in is exactly as it has been for the past 13 years. The worn bearskin rug, the huge sofa covered with faded chintz, the mantelpiece cluttered with miscellaneous objects, unanswered letters, and piles of loose tobacco. On one side of the fireplace, in a deep armchair, his pipe, curling forth slow wreaths of acrid tobacco, draped in his hideous purple dressing gown, sits Sherlock Holmes with his violin under his chin.
Come in. Watson, my dear fellow.
How are you, Holmes?
I'm delighted to see you, perfectly delighted. Upon my word, I am, but I'm sorry to observe that your wife has left you.
She has gone, on a little visit. But how did you know?
How did I? Well, I like that. How do I know anything? How do I know you've been getting yourself very wet lately, that you've an extremely careless servant girl, and that you've moved your dressing table to the other side of the room?
Holmes, if you had lived a few centuries ago, they'd have burned you alive.
Such a conflagration would have saved me a great deal of trouble and expense.
Tell me now, how did you know all that?
It's too simple to talk about. Scratches and clumsy cuts, my dear fellow, on the inner side of your shoe there, just where the firelight strikes it. Scratches, cuts. Somebody scraped away crusted mud, and did it badly, badly. Scraped a shoe along with it. There's your wet foot, my dear Watson, and your careless servant girl, all on one shoe. Face badly shaved on the right side, always used to be on the left. Light must come from the other side. Couldn't well move your window, must have moved your dressing table.
Of course. But how the deuce did you know my wife was away?
Well, where the deuce is your second waistcoat button, Watson? And what the deuce is yesterday's boutonniere doing on today's lapel? And why the deuce do you wear the expression of a...
Marvelous.
Elementary, my dear fellow, elementary. The child's play of deduction. I'm only doing it for your amusement before we pass on to more serious matters.
Oh, what is it now, Holmes?
Watson, my dear fellow, in the enthusiasm which has prompted you to chronicle, and, if you will excuse my saying so, somewhat to embellish my little, adventures, you have occasionally seen fit to introduce a certain element of romance, which struck me as being just a trifle out of place, something like working an elopement into the fifth proposition of Euclid. I merely refer to this in case you should see fit at some future time to chronicle the case on which I am about to embark. The strange case of Professor Robert Moriarty.
Moriarty? I don't remember ever having heard of the fellow.
No, Watson, you haven't. It is precisely this quality of invisibility that makes Professor Moriarty the Napoleon of crime, sitting motionless like an ugly, venomous spider in the center of his web. But that web having 1,000 radiations, and the spider knowing every quiver of every one of them. And within 48 hours, I'll have the lines drawn so tightly around him that he can't move. I'll arrest him and his entire gang.
Why, Holmes, this is a very dangerous thing.
My dear fellow, it's perfectly delightful. My whole life is spent in a series of frantic endeavors to escape from the dreary commonplaces of existence. For a brief period, I escape. You should congratulate me. The day before yesterday, I received in this room the visit of a certain foreign nobleman who had recently inherited a very considerable title and who is about to be married. Seems that this titled gentleman was so indiscreet as to fall in love with a young English lady by the name of Faulkner, socially his inferior, and to make her a promise of marriage. Later, at his family's insistence, the thing was broken off and the young lady died shortly after of a broken heart, leaving behind a sister. Also considerable evidence in the form of letters, photographs, and jewelry with inscriptions. These the sister kept. These, together with the sister, are now being held in a house in St. John's Wood by a pair of blackmailers who go by the name of Chetwood. So far, as you see, my dear Watson, a fairly ordinary case of blackmail, hardly worth my attention. Last night at my inspection, a certain element revealed itself which renders the case far more important than I had expected.
And that element was?
Professor Moriarty. Come in.
Beg pardon, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Billy, what is it?
Gentleman to see you by the name of Foreman.
Show him in, Billy, show him in.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. Come in, Mr. Foreman.
Good evening, Foreman.
Good evening, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, Watson, this is Inspector Foreman. Since the day before yesterday, he occupies the position of butler under the name of Judson in the home of Mr. and Mrs. Chetwood, the blackmailers of St. John's Wood. Well, Foreman, any news?
Yes, sir. This morning, a little after 9, Chetwood and his wife drove away in a four-wheeler. They returned about 11. Bassick was with them. You know him, sir?
Yes. When I last had the occasion to meet Mr. Bassick, he got 2 years for safe-cracking. Go on, Foreman.
Well, they took this man Bassick into the library. I got a look at him from the outside. And there he was, opening up the safe where they've been keeping the letters.
Go on.
In the end, when they got the safe open, it was empty. The letters were gone. It seems like the Faulkner girl got them back somehow. That got them pretty excited. Bassick went out to send a telegram.
Have you got a copy of it?
Yes, yes, here it is, sir. It's in code.
Moriarty. I thought so, Watson. This case is taking a most promising turn. Foreman, you'll return at once to the house in St. John's Wood. Within 10 minutes, I shall be there myself. If I remember correctly, the kitchen is immediately below the drawing room.
Yes.
When I knock over a chair in the drawing room, you'll overturn a lamp in the kitchen, scatter smoke balls, and give an alarm of fire. All other instructions remain unchanged.
Very good, sir.
Hurry, Foreman.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Well, my dear Watson, it begins to look like a most interesting evening.
Now will you give me those letters?
No, I won't. I won't.
Now will you? Now will you?
Ah, good evening. My name is Sherlock Holmes.
Whom did you wish to see, Mr. Holmes?
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Chetwood. I had myself announced by the butler on the way up.
The butler? I didn't... very well. Oh, here he is. Yes, Judson?
Miss Faulkner begs Mr. Holmes to excuse her. She is not well enough to see anyone this evening.
Will you please hand this card to Miss Faulkner and say that I have...
I beg your pardon, Mr. Holmes, but it's quite useless, really.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear it.
Yes. Miss Faulkner is, I regret to say... quite invalid. She is quite unable to see anyone. Her health is so poor.
Ah. Has it ever occurred to you, Mr. Chetwood, that she might be confined to the house too much?
How does that concern you?
It doesn't. I simply made the suggestion. Might like to think it over. What's your butler's name?
Judson, sir.
Very well, Judson. Go on, take up my card.
Very good, sir.
Well, this is really too good. Why, of course, he can take up your card, or your note, or whatever it is, if you wish it so much. I was only trying to save you the trouble.
Thanks. It's hardly any trouble at all to send up a card.
Do you know, Mr. Holmes, you interest me very much.
Ah, really?
Upon my word, yes. We've all heard of your wonderful methods, the astonishing manner in which you gain information from the most trifling details. Now, I dare say, in this brief moment or two, you've discovered any number of things about me.
Nothing of consequence, Mr. Chetwood. I hardly more than ask myself why you were so distressed to see me at this particular moment. And what there could possibly be about the safe in the lower part of your desk to cause you such painful anxiety.
Very good. Very good indeed. If those things were only true now, I'd be wonderfully impressed. It would be absolutely remarkable.
Excuse me, sir.
Ah, Judson!
A message for you, Mr. Chetwood.
You'll excuse me, I trust. It's from, Miss Faulkner. Well, really, she begs to be allowed to see you, Mr. Holmes. She absolutely implores it. Well, I suppose I shall have to give away. Judson, ask Miss Faulkner to come down to the drawing room. Say that Mr. Holmes is waiting to see her.
Very good, sir.
Quite remarkable, upon my soul. May I ask, if it's not an impertinent question, what message you sent up that could have so aroused Miss Faulkner's desire to come down?
Really, if she wasn't down here in 5 minutes, I'd go up.
Oh, that was it.
Yes, quite so. And unless I am greatly mistaken, I hear the young lady on the stairs. In which case, she has a minute and a half to spare.
Alice? That is, Miss Faulkner. Let me introduce Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Mr. Holmes?
Ah, Miss Faulkner.
I'm really most charmed to meet you. Although, it does look as if you'd made me come down in spite of myself, doesn't it?
I thank you very much indeed for consenting to see me, Miss Faulkner, but regret to observe that you were put into the trouble of making such a very rapid change of dress.
Yes. I did hurry a trifle, I confess. Mr. Holmes is quite living up to his reputation, isn't he, Freddy? Come in.
Yes, ma'am?
What are you doing here, Judson?
I beg pardon, ma'am. I was answering the bell.
What bell?
The drawing room bell, sir.
What do you mean, you blockhead? No one rang the bell.
I'm quite sure it was rung, sir.
Well, I tell you, it did not ring.
Your butler is right, Mr. Chetwood. The bell did ring.
How do you know?
I rang it.
What do you want?
I want to send my card to the real Miss Faulkner.
The real...
I said the real Miss Faulkner. Judson?
Yes, sir?
Holmes, what right do you have to ring for servants and give orders in my house?
What right do you have to prevent my cards from reaching their destination? And how does it happen that you and this woman are resorting to trickery and deceit to prevent me from seeing Alice Faulkner? Through some trifling oversight, Judson, neither of the cards I handed to you have been delivered. Kindly see that this error does not occur again.
My orders, sir.
Ah, you have orders.
I can't say, sir.
You were told not to deliver my card.
What business is it of yours, I'd like to know?
I shall satisfy your curiosity on that point in a very short time, Mr. Chetwood.
Yes, and you'll find out in a very short time that it isn't safe to meddle with me. It wouldn't be any trouble at all for me to throw you out in the street.
Possibly not. But trouble would swiftly follow such an experiment on your part.
It's a cursed lucky thing for you I'm not armed.
Yes, well, when Miss Faulkner comes down, you go and arm yourself.
Arm myself? I'll call the police! What's more, I'll do it now!
Oh, no, you will not do it now. You will remain where you are until the lady I came here to see has entered this room.
What makes you so sure of that?
Because you will prefer to avoid an investigation of your suspicious conduct, Mr. James Larrabee.
Larrabee?
That is the name under which you are known to Scotland Yard, I believe, Mr. Chetwood. This lady here is your wife. As to you, Judson, you will either deliver this card to Miss Faulkner at once or sleep in the police station tonight. It's a matter of small consequence to me which you do.
Shall I go, sir?
Go on. Take up the card. It makes no difference to me.
A short time since, Larrabee, you displayed an acute anxiety to leave the room. Pray do not let me detain you, or your wife, any longer. I take it you prefer to remain while I talk to Miss Faulkner?
We do, Mr. Holmes.
Ah, at last. Miss Faulkner.
This is Mr. Holmes?
Yes.
You wished to see me?
Very much indeed, Miss Faulkner. But I am sorry to see that you are far from well.
Oh, no, I...
No? I beg your pardon. What does this mark mean?
Oh, nothing.
Nothing?
No.
And the mark here on your neck, plainly showing the clutch of a man's finger, does that mean nothing also? It occurs to me that I should like to have an explanation of this. Possibly you can furnish one, Mr. Larrabee.
How should I know?
It seems to have occurred in your own house.
What if it did? You'd better understand that it isn't healthy for you or anyone else to interfere with my business.
Ah, then it is your business. We have that much at least. Pray be seated, Miss Faulkner.
I don't know who you are, Mr. Holmes, or why you are here.
I shall be very glad indeed to explain. My business is this. I've been consulted as to the possibility of obtaining from you certain letters addressed to your sister, which are supposed to be in your possession.
I cannot give up my sister's letters, Mr. Holmes. There are other things beside revenge. There is punishment.
Believe me, Miss Faulkner.
There is nothing more to say. Good night, Mr. Holmes.
But my dear Miss Faulkner... Oh, I'm so sorry. How clumsy of me to turn over this chair.
Fire, fire, help, help.
What's that? What's that? What's going on in your house here?
What is it? What's going on?
Fire, Mr. Chetwood, fire.
Fire? Where?
The lamp, sir.
Lamp?
The lamp in the kitchen, sir. It fell off the table and everything down there is blazing, sir.
Blazing?
Quick, sir, come down.
We're coming.
Don't alarm yourself, Miss Faulkner. There is no fire.
No fire?
The smoke was all arranged for.
Arranged for? What does it mean, Mr. Holmes?
It means this, Miss Faulkner. It means that I wanted a package of letters, Miss Faulkner, and that by following your eyes just now when you thought there was a fire, I discovered you'd hidden them in the upholstery of this chair. Quite elementary, as you see. And now that they are in my possession, there seems to be no reason for me to remain any longer in this house. Good night, Miss Faulkner. Miss Faulkner?
Yes?
I can't take them, Miss Faulkner. These letters belong to you. I find that I cannot keep them. Unless you can possibly change your mind and let me have them of your own free will. I hardly supposed you could. I will therefore return them to you and... Oh, here's our friend, Mr. Larrabee, returning from the fire.
So, you've got the letters, have you? Now I suppose we're going to see you walk out of the house with them.
On the contrary, you're going to see me return them to the rightful owner. Miss Faulkner, here are your letters. Should you ever change your mind and be so generous, so forgiving, as to wish to return these letters to the one who wrote them, you have my address. In any event, rest assured there will be no cruelty, no more persecution in this house.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes.
You are perfectly safe with your property, Miss Faulkner, for I shall so arrange it that your faintest cry of distress will be heard. And if that cry is heard, it will be very unfortunate for those who are responsible. As for you, Mr. Larrabee, and you, Madame, I beg you to understand that you will continue your persecution of that young lady at your peril. Good night.
Miss Faulkner! Come here, Miss Faulkner, now! Are you going to give me those letters?
No, never!
Are you going to give me those letters? Now then!
Be careful, Jim!
You shut up! Now then, Miss Faulkner, do you give me those letters, or do I break your arm? What's that?
Someone knocked on the door.
No, it was on that side.
Did you call, madam?
I think someone knocked, Judson.
I'll see, madam. I beg pardon, madam, but there's no one at the door.
Very well. You may go. He's got us watched.
What we want to do is to leave it alone. Let the Emperor have it.
Do you mean Professor Moriarty?
That's who I mean. Once I let him get at it, he'll settle it with Holmes pretty quick. Don't you worry a minute. I'll tell you, Professor Moriarty will get him before noon tomorrow night. He won't wait long either. And when he strikes, it means death.
Number
82.